Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
What kind of mythical powers does a Sun Devil have? We got to consider that.
It's embarrassing, but we are who we are. We're not a very good team, but we're 3-1 somehow. And we got all the voters fooled, thinking we're pretty good.
Jaworski Lane at 275 pounds showed a heck of a lot of athletic ability.
Welcome to a special edition of the RotoWire College Football Podcast. We're coming to you live Friday, January 7th, right around noon Central Time. Nick Whalen joined, as always, by RotoWire College Football lead guru, John McKechnie. Jonathan, huge weekend coming up for you, and a huge Monday as well. I mean, the game that we are, of course, all looking forward to, Georgia-Alabama from Indianapolis on Monday night. You will be in attendance. There is no question that John McKechnie would have to be in attendance at this game at Lucas Oil. Before we get into the game, we're going to talk all the betting angles. Georgia right now, a 2.5-point favorite. The total sits at 52 points. We'll break that down. We'll break down a bunch of props. But first of all, what is your travel plan? You know, when are you arriving? What's the game plan? How are you going to get mentally ready for this game on Monday night?
Yeah, this is so much to process. You know, we were all together on New Year's Eve watching the game at a friend's place. And, you know, once it became pretty clear that Georgia was going to win that one, get on StubHub and just kind of dove in with both feet. And I know that, like, the market kind of dropped out and, like, apparently, you know, the tickets, I could have gotten them for a lot cheaper. But, like, at this point, the money's spent. I don't care. I'm going. That's all that I'm really concerned about. So the plan is Sunday. We're piling into the car. I have a buddy from around here in Atlanta that just moved to Dallas. And, you know, theoretically, you would think that he's just going to get from Texas to Indianapolis. But no, he is literally flying to Atlanta to drive up with us. Like, he did not want to miss the road trip element of this particular trip. And he's the one who actually, he booked this Airbnb that we're staying at back in July or August. So he's had his faith in the dogs for a long time now, and in anticipation of this, we got other friends coming in from all different parts of the country. North Carolina, got a friend stationed in Omaha, Nebraska, is going to be there, so it's going to be a really good time with everybody, and we'll get there. We'll hit the road again Sunday morning, get up to Indy, you know, Sunday late afternoon. I have a friend, I tweeted out the picture of the group text. He's already mapped out where all the Long John Silvers are in relation to Lucas Oil Stadium. So if we need any fast food, seafood, we have that covered as well.
That's huge. I love Long John Silvers. There's a great one on Oneida in Green Bay, Wisconsin that I frequented a number of times over the years. I hope you have a better experience in Indy than I did when I made a similar road trip down to the NCAA tournament national title game when Wisconsin played Duke. And like you said, like, almost the best part is the ride down, like the anticipation, I guess for you, it'll be the ride up, but you know, you got six guys piled in a car that really should only seat five. Mm-hmm. Everybody's uncomfortable. It's hot. You know, a couple of guys are trying to drink beers in the back seat. You don't feel great about that. You have to stop to pee a bunch, but those are always super, super fun times. I mean, you have very few opportunities, especially as you get older, to make a trip like that. So completely agree that's unmissable, you know, if you're that guy. So a lot of credit to him for flying and making the drive instead of just going direct. But man, I tell you what, when Wisconsin lost and we had to make that drive home, it was the most sullen 6 hours of my life. You know, it was just, it would be silent for like a full hour. And then somebody in the back would just sigh, and yep. all of a sudden all the discourse would start again. It would be, Grayson Allen touched that ball, you know, and like we just start rehashing over and over and over. And, you know, nobody wanted to believe that that Wisconsin had actually lost. So for your sake, I mean, we actually went home the night of the game. We made a deal that if Wisconsin won, we would find a way to stay and party. You know, we did not book a hotel. Everything was booked up, but we were content to just like stay out all night basically if they won. But if they lost, we said, all right, we'll drive home. Because one of our buddies like really had to work the next day. So they lost. We had to drive back. I assume you'll at least be staying the night regardless of the result.
That is correct. We have the place until Tuesday morning. So yeah, win or lose, we'll be there. Don't have to worry too much about driving out. But the wheel man, I'm sure, is going to be, especially if the unspeakable happens, then I'm sure that he'll just be like, get me out of here. So like, we'll probably have to leave like very early Tuesday morning, I would imagine, if things go sideways.
Well, for your sake, I hope they don't again. And, you know, how surprised are you that this number, I believe it opened up at Georgia -3. It's now at Georgia -2.5. We're looking at the DK Sportsbook. You know, obviously everybody knows Alabama handled Georgia pretty easily not that long ago. But no John Metchie for Alabama. And obviously Georgia made a major statement with the way that they beat down a very good Michigan team last weekend. What did you make of Georgia opening up as the favorite in this game?
I was surprised. I really was. I think that the way that Alabama just kind of exposed, for lack of a better word, Georgia in Atlanta, I would have figured that plus, you know, Alabama's just kind of general cachet. I mean, they've been in this spot so many times. This is only the second time that Georgia's been here in quite some time. And, you know, obviously the second time since 2017. But Bama's here. You almost expect them to be here. So, like, this stage isn't too bright for them, not too big for them. Still a really good Alabama team that again, just kind of dismantled Georgia just a month ago. So I'm surprised to see the line unfold the way that it has. And I do have some info from a buddy of mine over at WinBet. I asked him what the splits were looking at as of Thursday, and it's pretty lopsided, actually. So I think a lot of people have that same general reaction where it's like, why is Georgia favored? Because as far as the money line goes, Alabama drawing 77, almost 78% of the bets, 90% of the money line bets are on Alabama. As far as the spread goes, two-thirds of the bets are on Alabama to cover the spread, and 70% of the money is also on Bama covering, you know, what was posted at 3 points at that specific time. So the public is heavily on Alabama in this one, and it is surprising that the line hasn't moved all too much to reflect that.
Yeah, I feel like this could have been Alabama -3 or Alabama -2.5. And I think we would see the same splits, right? You know, I don't, all these people betting on Alabama, I don't think it's like, oh, well, you know, they're underdogs, so now I'm going to bet on them. I think a lot of people would bet on Alabama to cover 3 if they were favored in that situation. So yeah, I was surprised. I mean, I think a lot of it is, you know, again, John Metchie went out in that game against Georgia, but still played really well and was really impactful before going out with that injury. But to me, more than anything, you know, Alabama has so many guys that's not that much of a concern. And I wouldn't say Alabama really struggled with Cincinnati, but, you know, it felt like a B plus game for Alabama, whereas it felt like an A plus game against Michigan for Georgia. So that to me is what really, I think, influenced the spread more than anything, is Georgia really making that statement against Michigan. Because I mean, I know they were about a touchdown favorite when that one closed, but to a lot of people, that was essentially a 50-50 game.
Yeah, I mean, as far, you know, from that same sports book, 52% of the money at right around kickoff was on Michigan money line. I mean, so that goes to show, you know, I think, and rightfully so, at least at the time, public opinion had soured on Georgia. I mean, they had gotten so beaten down and you know, on the other side of that, Michigan, you know, it's like, oh, not only do they have like the number one pick possibly on one side of the edge, but then they have this other guy that's going to be in the first round on the other. You know, they've been scoring points at will. They've been running the ball extremely well all season long. They just slayed their dragon. They beat Ohio State, and then they just trounced Iowa very good chance that Michigan wins that game, especially, you know, if you take like the recency bias and compare it to, you know, how Georgia looked last time out and would they be able to get off the mat. So, yeah, you juxtapose that where Georgia really did have an impressive game against a better team, I would say, than Cincinnati. I think Michigan would beat Cincinnati probably 7-8 times out of 10. And yeah, Bama didn't – they never really, like, hit their stride necessarily. I'm not sure that – not to say that they didn't want to, but they it almost felt like they didn't force it necessarily. Like, they were content to just go to what was working pretty well, which was the run game, which I guess was working extremely well. And they were able to just kind of ride that all the way to the end. And they knew that Cincinnati just simply didn't have any answers on offense. Like, they, you know, their two best drives were coming out on scripts, coming out of the first drive of the game and then coming out of halftime as well. And it resulted in all of 6 points. And then the rest of it was just really just kind of Desmond Ridder getting thrown to the wolves in a lot of ways. So, I don't think that there's too much that you can take from that Alabama-Cincinnati game and apply it this week, whereas I think there is maybe a little bit of something to the way that Georgia beat Michigan.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, do you think, is it fair to say Alabama, you know, was, you always hear the trope of like, well, they were saving, you know, their good plays, basically. You know, they didn't want to show too much. They felt that they could win this game just kind of playing basic smash mouth football. And that's what we saw for most of the game. I mean, Alabama has had trouble for the most part this season playing that type of game. You know, you're not necessarily used to seeing Brian Robinson picking up like 8 yards every single time he runs up the middle. I mean, against SEC defenses, you know, at least 75% of the time this year that hasn't really flown. I mean, do you think there's any truth to that belief, or do you think that's just the game plan that Alabama had going in, and you know, that's how they felt like they could beat Cincinnati?
Yeah, I think that they knew that they had a decided advantage in the trenches that really they haven't had all season long. That goes to your point about Robinson maybe not having the most explosive Alabama running back season for most of the year. But obviously when your offensive line is going up against a good, but in all reality, an undersized defensive front seven that Cincinnati was bringing out there, Alabama just all of a sudden they had that option to go back to playing bully ball, and they took that option and they obviously ran with it. And, you know, you also look at the fact that Cincinnati is really, really good against the pass. So it's like, if Cincinnati's going to do everything it can to mitigate Bryce Young's impact, just go ahead and go to the ground. And, you know, once they started finding success through that avenue, which they did almost immediately, it just made all the sense in the world to just kind of keep mining that vein, really. So, it didn't surprise me that Alabama came out and did what they did in that particular fashion. But I think it's also fair to say that they want it, whether or not that they were, you know, quote unquote, saving those plays for the national championship game, they simply won't be able to play on Monday the way that they did against Cincinnati. It's going to be different. I think it will look a lot more similar to what we saw first time out, where Bryce Young, you know, dropped back upwards of 40 times in that SEC championship game.
So as we're chatting here, the line just moved in favor of Georgia. It's now Georgia -3. So we maybe have to update those splits. But I mean, we've kind of talked about how these teams both got to this game, you know, what it looked like last weekend. Unfortunately, you know, both of those games, as has been the case for what it feels like the majority of these semifinal games over the years, you know, were pretty one-sided. But I think everyone's in agreement that we're going to get a really good game. It's hard to imagine, I think, Georgia, you know, coming up short in the same ways that they did when these teams matched up a few weeks ago during the regular season. But how do you see this playing out? What's your level of confidence in Georgia? How much did that first matchup, you know, kind of change what you expected to see from Stetson Bennett in this offense?
Yes. So I guess I will start with Stetson Bennett in the offense. I think everyone wants to know the big question as to whether Georgia's pass defense, will it be able to hold up against Alabama this time after getting, you know, pretty much shredded the first time out. But I'll start with Georgia's offense. They moved the ball pretty well on Alabama, I thought, the first time around. They played their A game, I thought, a week ago against Michigan, you know, pulling out that halfback pass from Kenny McIntosh. That was great. Going heavily at Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers really just kind of an unstoppable force there. And I think Alabama knows that. And I think what makes that all interesting as far as how Georgia is able to kind of adjust on the fly. You know, Bowers had a ton of success in the SEC championship game against Bama as well. I think that he's going to be kind of priority number one for that Bama defense. I think he's still going to get a lot of targets, but they're going to be really contested. They're going to be probably bracketing coverage to him. So it comes down to who on Georgia's, you know, the rest of the skill guys can really step up. We've saw James Cook get used out of the slot and used on wheel routes. And he's a really dynamic pass catcher. And he's, he's a lot like his brother. Like, it's not lazy to say that because it's true. I mean, the guy is just kind of a freak show out there. He's really, really fast, really athletic, really smooth. So I expect to see him get involved in the passing game a decent bit. And then, you know, Jermaine Burton didn't really deliver on the promise that he showed as a true freshman last year. But he was hurt for a lot of the season. He had a big play against Michigan. I think he's fully healthy now. And I think he's a huge X factor. And even 80% George Pickens, if he's able to you know, kind of put it together for a couple of drives and look like himself, then Georgia suddenly has a much deeper and more varied passing attack for Stetson Bennett to work with. And Georgia's offensive line will need to do similarly as it did against Michigan, where they were able to neutralize both Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo. I don't think I heard Ojabo's name even once during that broadcast, really. So if they're able to do that, Will Anderson, different type of player, coming from a different type of spot than those two guys. But if they can keep Will Anderson from wrecking the game, which they had pretty good success doing the first time around, get Stetson Bennett some time to throw and use the weapons beyond Brock Bowers, and it sets up pretty well for the Georgia offense.
I think so too. I mean, I think you obviously that first game went sideways for them after that great start. They kind of let things slip and were never able to fully recover and stop the bleeding. I thought defensively more than anything, some of the big plays that the Georgia defense had basically been able to avoid or prevent this entire season, like all that came crashing down with Bryce Young and Jameson Williams. But I mean, not having to worry about Mechie at all this game, I think is big. Like, it's still Alabama. You know, you'd still take this receiving core over, like, you know, 95% of the receiving corps in the country, but, you know, it's also not nearly as talent heavy or, you know, experience heavy as these last few years outside of Jameson Williams. So I think if you're Georgia, you feel pretty good about that matchup. Let's start looking at some of the player props in this game. And we'll start, I think, with the quarterbacks. Bryce Young, 314.5 is his passing yardage total. Stetson Bennett down at 249.5. Do you like the over or the under on either of those? Does one to jump out over the other?
So obviously Bryce Young's is really high. You know, that's just a big number. But at the same time, I think that you look back to how things unfolded the first time around, I think this is going to be a close game. And I also think that the run game isn't going to be as effective for Alabama as it was against Cincinnati. I think it's going to be more put in Bryce Young's hands here. And I think that just on sheer volume of attempts, like I think they're pretty much going to throw it until Georgia proves that that's no longer a viable strategy, which might not even happen. It might be a night where Bryce Young is just on fire and he's not getting sacked and he's just throwing it all over the place. So even sans John Mechie, I think that Bryce Young probably goes over in this one. And I think Stetson Bennett, for his part, I don't know how well Georgia's going to run the ball necessarily. I think it makes me a little bit queasy to say this, but it is a little bit on Stetson Bennett's shoulders on Monday. And I think that if you do believe that this is a close game, or you do believe that Georgia's going to win, then I think you have to expect Stetson Bennett to be playing well in that matchup. So there's a little bit more juice on the over. And I think that, you know, that seems to imply that that is a better shot of hitting. I would take the over 249.5 for both of these quarterbacks. I think we're going to see a lot of the offensive fireworks coming through the air.
I mean, it's super cliche to say, but, you know, I think whichever team's quarterback plays better is going to win this game. And they're kind of judged on different scales, because you expect a little bit more out of Bryce Young than I think you do Stetson Bennett, who, fair or not, is labeled as a game manager. And I think for the most part, that's probably fair. You know, you mentioned, like, maybe Bryce Young goes crazy again. I mean, he went for, what, 421 yards, 3 touchdowns, some long completions in the SEC title game. Does that have to happen for Alabama to win? Like, can Bryce Young throw for 250 yards and 2 touchdowns and have an okay game, and can Alabama still win? Like, what is the path to that happening? Like, because I agree with you, I don't think Brian Robinson's going to go crazy against this Georgia defense, but he also didn't have to you know, in the SEC title game. 16 carries, 55 yards. He was okay, but they were able to hit those chunk plays through the air, and it never really felt like, you know, they had to establish the run. You know, a lot of those yards came later in the game when they're running out the clock. So we didn't really see Alabama in a situation where, you know, they had to put the ball on the ground and pick up difficult first downs.
Right. And I think, you know, a lot has been made of Brian Robinson because of how well he ran it against Cincinnati. And, you know, he was just, like you said, it was a pretty pedestrian day from him, but they didn't really need it when they played Georgia the first time around. I think that the big factor is that Robinson's healthy now. He was not healthy for that Georgia game, I didn't think. You know, you watch the Iron Bowl, pulls up lame a couple different times during that game, and you just felt like he was not at 100%. Like, he was pretty much just playing on grit in Atlanta. He looked fully healthy last week, so maybe he does become a little bit more of a factor this time around, but I still think that Georgia's defense is going to be pretty keyed in on making sure that you know, he's not picking up the first downs and allowing Alabama to have these big, long drives, like the eight-minute type of drives that they did against Cincinnati that he was so crucial in. So to answer your overall question there, I think, Bryce, for Alabama to win on Monday, I think it absolutely has to be Bryce Young having a great game, because I just don't really view this Alabama team as great outside of Bryce Young. I mean, there are some great individual players, of course, Jameson Williams and the left tackle, is that Evan Neal, I think, Will Anderson. Yep. I mean, they have studs, of course, like that. No one's saying that, but this team isn't as good as it was a year ago. It's a very, very good team, and Georgia will need to play one of its best games, if not its total best game, in order to get the win on Monday. But I think a subpar performance from Bryce Young could result in you know, the Tide maybe falling behind a little bit, or you know, looking mortal like they did against Arkansas, like they did against LSU, like they did against Auburn, that type of thing, where they just, something seems off, and it starts with Young if he is struggling or getting pressured.
I think you're totally right that this might be Alabama's like worst or second worst team of the last 10 years, and they're still playing in the national championship and have probably at worst a coin flip chance to win. I mean, it's unbelievable. Most teams, you know, you have a down year and you're talking like even the other great teams around the country. I mean, like Clemson's down year is you're unranked 3 weeks into the year and it's basically a lost season. You know, most other teams' down years are 3-4 losses. For Alabama, a down year is one fluky loss to Texas A&M, and you're not favored by that much in the national title game.
Yeah, it certainly does not end for them with Nick Saban getting fed Cheez-Its by Prince Chedward, like Dabo Sweeney was after the Cheez-It Bowl. Great image, great picture that was.
Let's look at the rushing yards. I think this is a little tougher. Alabama kind of runs not quite a one-back system. I mean, you do still have Trey Sanders. And Bryce Young can run it a little bit as well, but he doesn't even have a rushing prop up on DK, although ironically Stetson Bennett does, 13 and a half yards. So if you have a strong take on that one, let me know. But, you know, with Georgia, it's James Cook, it's Zamir White, it's obviously Bennett, who apparently is going to be Cam Newton in this game. But it's split fairly evenly between those two. So, you know, it's a little easier, I think, to give a take on Brian Robinson, whose number is 64 and a half, but we don't always know what the breakdown is going to be between Cook and White. Cook's number is 42 and a half. Zamir White's 46 and a half. So, you know, slight favor towards Zamir. But do you have any strong takes on any of these numbers?
Yeah. So this is an interesting board for sure. And you know, I noticed from yesterday that Trey Sanders' number, I think, has come down even further. Not that it's much right now. It's 19 and a half. It was like maybe 23 yesterday when I was taking a glimpse. But like you said, Brian Robinson is the only one with like a truly like bankable starters type of workload because of the way that Georgia rotates its backs between Zamir White and James Cook. And it's not just those two guys. You saw Kendall Milton get in the mix last week. You saw Kenny McIntosh. So I don't really like betting these Georgia running back rushing props. I do like James Cook's receiving prop. Let me see if I can grab that real quick. That's at 20 and a half. I do like the over on that one, but I think the only Georgia rushing prop that I would take is the over on Stetson Bennett, because you watch him play and he's good at hitting the eject button. Like if he doesn't like what he sees, he will scramble and pick up 6-7 yards and pick up a first down. Like he is very adept at that. I know it looks goofy. I know he's the mailman. I know none of this makes sense, and it hasn't made sense all year, but dude's kind of athletic. Like, he just kind of gets it done. 13.5 is a low number. I think that Bama can flush him out of the pocket enough times to where Bennett is kind of forced to take off. And yeah. I think that 13.5 number, that should hold. I do like Bennett to hit the over there. And for Robinson, that's – to say less is to kind of be like, oh, he's going to have a bad game. I think Robinson can have a totally fine game. But 64.5, if Georgia's up, then maybe he doesn't get fed as much as you right. would hope or would need for him to hit that number. So I would go under for Robinson. And over for Stetson Bennett, and those are the two rushing props that I'd be interested in.
So Bennett's gone over that number most of the time pretty comfortably in 8 of 13 games this year. So I don't think you're crazy at all to pick that one as a winner. I mean, he had 11 yards rushing against Alabama in the first game, but you know, I obviously this is somewhat of a fluky one, but I think 13.5 is a pretty friendly number there. Yeah, with Robinson, it's so tough because, like you said, if you go under this number, you're implying that you know, he's going to have a bad game or Alabama's going to struggle. But I mean, he also had 55 yards and they blew out Georgia in the SEC title game. So you know, it could follow that same script again. Like, it wouldn't be shocking if we see Bryce Young locked in from the start and the Alabama passing game is humming and they just don't even want to mess around with trying to run on this Georgia defense. Like, that doesn't mean that it's a bad game for Robinson, or it doesn't mean that Alabama is going to struggle offensively. I mean, they've had plenty of games where the offense has looked just fine, and it hasn't been Robinson, you know, going for almost 200 yards like he did against Cincinnati. Like, I don't think Alabama, there's not a world to me where Brian Robinson is like carrying Alabama to a victory. I think it's almost better if Brian Robinson doesn't have a big day, because I think that means that the passing game, you know, they're hitting these big ones that is ultimately, I think, the path to Alabama winning this game.
Yeah, I think you have that summed up pretty nicely as far as like what an ideal game plan and you know, split run pass split would end up looking like for them. And Robinson is an effective pass catcher as well when you know, other options aren't available.
So looking at receiving props, there are a ton, including Ladd McConkey, an all-time name, somebody that really we haven't given enough shine to. I know we talked about him early on when we highlighted some names, but we have not had enough McConkey talk on this podcast. I mean, Jameson Williams is the one that jumps out. I mean, his prop is significantly higher than any other players. You have Brock Bowers at 66.5 yards. You got Ja'Cory Brooks at 45.5. And then there's a huge gap up to Jameson Williams at 112.5. And to me, it felt like Jameson Williams was like almost invisible by his standards against Cincinnati. Still had 7 catches for 62 yards in that game, but didn't have those like monster game-breaking plays that we've seen over and over from him throughout the season. So I thought Cincinnati actually did about as good of a job as they could on Jameson Williams. But obviously, you know, a few weeks ago, he burns Georgia, 7 catches, 184 yards, 2 touchdowns, a couple long ones that accounted for a big chunk of that yardage. You know, you mentioned at the top, you know, that Georgia obviously knows that Jameson Williams is the number one guy by far in this passing offense. How confident are you that they can bracket him and they can prevent another big game?
You know, it's going to be very tough. I mean, he clearly is going to be that focal point because his touchdown to kind of get things going for Alabama, that changed everything in that game. I think you look at last week and how it wasn't on paper all that productive of a day, at least by Williams' standards. He didn't have the big back-breaking type of plays that we're used to seeing from him. But I think what's important to note is that Alabama only threw the ball like 28 times in that game because, again, they were able to run the ball with impunity. It just didn't matter. They were going to pick up yardage that way. So why not just keep going to that? But I think what's important to note when you look at the fact that this was their first game, full game without John Metchie, Jameson Williams still had a 32% target share. So that was one of his highest figures of the entire season. And I think that you can expect a higher passing volume from Alabama, but I think you can also expect Williams's target share to remain constant. So I think that I'm a little bit less inclined to go with the yardage prop when it comes to Williams. 112.5 is a colossal number. I'm not doubting that he can get there, but I feel a little bit safer with just going with his receptions prop. I believe it's 6.5 I think that's the smarter way to get some action on Williams, because I do believe that just in general, he's going to push for 9, 10, maybe even upwards of 12 targets Monday, just because, you know, things are going to be tightened up as far as that receiver rotation is concerned. And I think that Williams is just going to see enough targets to where that prop hits comfortably. And what I am also interested in, a lot of people were wondering who steps up in Mechie's absence, right? And last week, Ja'Cory Brooks was that guy. You know, he had 25% target share. Looks pretty promising, of course. But I'm kind of willing to fade it because I think that everyone's on it. I think that everyone is just – they saw what they saw a week ago. They know that John Mechie is still going to be out. They're just kind of discounting the rest of the depth options as far as Bama's pass catchers go. And they think that Brooks is going to be like this lock. So 45.5, I'm either not playing it or I'm fading it. I think that's my approach. He obviously is talented enough to make that look silly, but I do believe that that there's going to be too much action on Brooks's over.
How do you feel about the Georgia side of these receiving props?
I think that the ones that I particularly like are, you know, Bowers, that's a big number, 66.5. I do believe that Alabama's going to do everything it can to at least limit him. How much can you really limit Brock Bowers, though? But as far as, you know, it's a minus 115 bet on either side. I'm just going to leave that one be, I think. I'd be more inclined to maybe do an anytime touchdown for Bowers. Sure. The way that I would do it is James Cook over the 20.5. I really love that. He can get all that yardage on one target. We've seen him do it time and time again. The other guy is really my X factor for the Georgia passing game. I alluded to him a minute ago, but Jermaine Burton over 35.5. I think that marries up nicely with his receiving prop, where I think he's sitting at like 2.5 catches. Really, really like the idea of him going over that number as well. So if he has 4 catches, he's definitely getting over 35 yards. Like there's no question about it. He plays, you know, the outside receiver position. He gets downfield. That's where he runs his routes. So Burton over 35.5 is my other strong lean as far as the Georgia offense is concerned. And as much as I like George Pickens, I just don't feel like he's completely himself. So I'm staying away from that 30.5 number, even though he did hit that number on one catch against Alabama back in December.
All right. Any other either player props, team props, you know, game specials that you like here? Otherwise we can move on to DFS.
Those are the main ones that I wanted to hit. Just like I have a lot of faith in the receptions when it comes to Jameson Williams. I have a lot of faith in the receiving yardage when it comes to James Cook. I think that might be my favorite overall prop here on the board entirely. Those are my big leans as far as the individual player props are concerned.
All right, DFS it is then. So we will do as we always do and start at the quarterback position. I assume we're looking at showdown contest on yes. DraftKings for this game. You have to roster one of these quarterbacks. Where are you going?
Right, exactly. So showdown, full disclosure, is not my specialty. Obviously in this particular instance, I'm looking more into this than I normally would. I did enjoy playing the showdown for Tuesday night's complete gong show between LSU and Kansas State. That was, I don't know if you caught any of that, but that was special. But I think this game, sure you can be a little bit more varied with who you're doing your captain spot with. Like on DraftKings, your captain spot is someone that you pay up a little bit more, but you get 1.5 points or 1.5 times their fantasy points as a result. Like if you didn't go Deuce Vaughn on Tuesday, you're probably sunk. This time around, I think there's a lot of different ways that you can approach it. I can see the justification for Jameson Williams at 15.3. I could see it, obviously, for Bryce Young at 15.9. Those are the two guys that I would mainly consider for captain. But you could also, if you're feeling real froggy and want to get a little differential, I've been saying it. I think that James Cook has a big game here. So it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world to me to go with James Cook at captain, because if it hits, it's going to smash.
I like it. I like it a lot. This is such a tough slate. to break down. You know, obviously with the captain spot and then the five utilities. I mean, you feel okay about Brian Robinson, like we talked about, just because he is, you know, such an obvious lead back for Alabama. But yeah, I mean, you have to choose between a couple backs for Georgia. I mean, you could even double down at quarterback if you want. I mean, is that a viable strategy? Yeah.
Yes, I think that it's important to do that, really, even. So I would definitely go with both quarterbacks. I think where you can find the value is in the Georgia depth pass catchers. I think, again, Jermaine Burton is going to be a major factor in this one. He's 7K, so he's not exactly cheap necessarily. But we've seen A.D. Mitchell. He caught the touchdown a week ago. He definitely has that ability. This time around, he gets himself on the field. Kyaris Jackson, this is, I believe, going to be his last game for Georgia. They get him involved in the run game a little bit on some jet sweeps, and he's a reliable guy over the middle as well. So Kyaris Jackson at 1,600, a decent way of saving up a little bit. I mean, on the other side too, Bama has these talented. It's not just a Corey Brooks. I assume that as long as JoJo Earl is available here, or even A.G. Hall, I think those are two interesting, you know, really bottom or like bargain bin type of guys that you can consider. And then one other $1,000 play would be Darnell Washington. He caught the touchdown against Alabama first time out. Georgia uses a lot of multiple tight end packages, probably, you know, almost as much as anyone else. In all of college football, just because they've recruited the position well between himself and Bowers, and they like to utilize it, especially when, you know, some of the receiver talent has been injured or at less than 100%. So I think Washington sees some snaps. I could see them running a play very similar to what they did in Atlanta and just getting Washington the ball in the red area. And at $1,000, that opens up a lot of flexibility for your lineup, and there's a lot of upside to go with it. I don't know if you remember, but when Darnell Washington committed on one of those college football or high school all-star games, they compared his body to LeBron James, actually bigger than LeBron James.
I love the NBA crossover. Anytime we can work that in, you're speaking my language.
You don't
get
to do it too often, but no. When you do, I guess it's usually a tight end.
Yes, exactly. People are always going to maintain that like LeBron could have been Antonio Gates if he wanted to. I'm not 100% sure about that. All right. Anything else? Any other big picture takes? If you just want to use this as kind of like a final counseling session to get anything off your chest about Georgia, feel free to let it loose.
Man, I mean, this is very excited. This has been just such a fun season. It does feel like it is a win or win the national championship or bust, because you look at the broader landscape of college football and Bama. This isn't their best team. Didn't even have to contend with Ohio State in the playoff this year. Clemson obviously had the down year. Like, so many other things have broken right for Georgia that it does feel like they have to go ahead and finish the job on Monday. And what's tough about that is that there's so much history here between Kirby Smart and Nick Saban. And Saban has had the upper hand every single time, even in games where Georgia's been up. It obviously fell apart and it went Bama's way. So something's got to give eventually, at least you might think, or maybe we officially enter the mindset as a country where it's like, Kirby will never beat Saban. And I will probably believe that on Monday if Alabama wins. And I think this is his best chance to do it. He already kind of took his lumps and knows how to adjust from here. Mm-hmm. We'll see if they can execute. I think it's going to be a really close game. I think it's going to be extremely competitive. I know that kind of flies in the face with how a lot of these national championship games have gone, where a lot of the times they're not good games. I think the best one in recent memory was the Georgia-Bama one from a couple of years ago, and then, of course, the yeah. Hunter Renfrow game the year right. before. But a lot of the times these games are pretty lopsided. But this year I think it's going to be really, really competitive on both sides, all four quarters. I'm going to be an emotional wreck on Monday night, whether Georgia wins or loses. So keep an eye on my Twitter feed. I'm sure there'll be some just goofy stuff going on.
Yeah, it's going to be wacky. There's no doubt about that. Man, I'm really happy that you're going to be in attendance, though. I mean, this really is not a once in a lifetime scenario. That's how it felt with Wisconsin. Like, the whole way there, we're like, we're never getting back here. Everybody knew it. The thing with Georgia is you could very well be back there this time next year. But I do agree. I think you're right that you know, I think Georgia could maybe even have some better teams in the future, but I think the combination of Georgia making it all the way here and then getting what we think is at least a diminished Alabama team relative to the other ridiculously high standards that Alabama teams of the past have set. So I think you're right to say this might be their best opportunity. And it's not even about Georgia. It's more that this Alabama team seems, you know, even 5 or 10% more vulnerable than those impenetrable teams of the past.
Yeah, I mean that if this was the team going up against the Mac Jones, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith team, I would not like their chances. But this exactly. time around, I do, and I think that Georgia, and there will be lots of hemming and hawing. There's always been a lot over the course of the season regarding whether Stetson should be starting over JT Daniels. Is JT Daniels healthy enough to play? All that. So I think Georgia can win it with Stetson Bennett. They make it a little bit harder on themselves by using Bennett. But at this point, right. like you got to ride the horse that got you there. I think it's just the way it goes. I don't think that Georgia has any tricks up their sleeves in terms of using JT Daniels. I think it's the Bennett show for better, for worse. And, you know, as a Georgia fan, I'm hoping for the better here.
Well, that's actually an interesting point to bring up. Could you see a Hurts to a situation unfolding with Bennett Daniels?
That would be, I mean, the parallels there and, you know, like all of the history that you could draw on from things going sideways for Georgia with backup quarterbacks from Alabama. Yeah. I mean, it would be an amazing story. It'd be, you know, kind of the Hollywood script. If Georgia somehow were to have to switch over to a backup quarterback and end up winning that game somehow. I don't see it playing out that way. But I mean, it sure would be something. I do actually still think that JT Daniels is extremely good, but I mean, he just hasn't faced live action in so long that just tossing him out there in the natty would be, Georgia would have to be down by like 3 scores in the third quarter type of deal. Because the thing about Tua is that Saban was comfortable going to him because the entire season, Bama would get up by a million points and then just like let Tua run the offense in the second half for funsies, and it made him ready. Daniels doesn't have that.
Right. No, you said it. I mean, you don't want that scenario. Like if JT Daniels is coming into the game, that means that you're either down or Stetson Bennett is hurt, you know? So there's probably not a scenario where things are going so well that JT Daniels is coming in to take over in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah. If he's on the field, yeah, something has likely yes. gone awry. And I don't think that they would give him like the ceremonial kneel down.
No. I mean, maybe the third scenario, I guess, is Georgia's up like 40 to nothing and he just gets to play, you know, the fourth quarter. So, I mean, for your sake, I hope that's the case, but best of luck, man. It's going to be a super fun trip. Again, I'm super envious that you get to have that experience and, you know, send a bunch of Snapchats, post a bunch of Instagrams. We'll be following the Twitter feed as always and make the most of it.
You know what, man, I'm just so looking forward to this. Appreciate it. I know that again, like you said, as a man who appreciates a trip with the fellas, this one should be an all-timer. I'm very, very excited and very lucky to be able to go and definitely going to make the most of it, even if Indianapolis is going to be like a frozen wasteland. But apparently dogs are already out there. I liked Barrett Salee's tweet earlier.
Oh yeah.
At the baggage claim in Indy, grown men barking. There's going to be a lot of that.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.